For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. Investigating and reporting on government corruption and overreach, you're listening to Scott Wheeler and Through the Looking Glass on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Through the Looking Glass. I'm Scott Wheeler on TNT Radio, broadcasting from Atlanta, Georgia. The National Science Teaching Association, the NSTA, boasts that with 40,000 members, it is the largest organization of science teachers worldwide. In its dogma, the NSTA states that it, quote, recognizes that scientific argumentation is not the same as arguing beliefs and opinions. It requires the use of evidence-based scientific explanations to defend arguments and critically evaluate this claim of others, unquote. Of course, this is what rigorous scientific exploration demands. So why does this so-called Science Teaching Association state, quote, any apparent controversies about the fundamental observations related to climate change science come from social, economic, or political domains, not from the scientific community, unquote. In other words, any scientific evidence that contradicts the notion of man-caused global warming is not real science, according to the NSTA. And they are very serious about stamping out any arguments that disagrees with that notion. A group of scientists from the CO2 Coalition found that out this week when it purchased a booth at the NSTA's convention in Atlanta. And for the offense of distributing scientific material to teachers about CO2 and explaining their disagreements with the NSTA, they were kicked out of the convention and removed from space that they had purchased. Gregory Wrightstone is one of those scientists. He's a geologist and best-selling author of Inconvenient Facts and an expert reviewer for the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Mr. Wrightstone is the executive director of the aforementioned CO2 Coalition, and he was one of the scientists who was kicked out of the NSTA convention. He joins us now, and I should add that our intention was to conduct this interview from the convention floor today, but the NSTA forced a change of plans. Mr. Wrightstone, welcome to TNT Radio's Through the Looking Glass.
Well, thank you, Scott. It was, I'll have to say, it maybe wasn't unexpected, but a couple big takeaways. First of all, you referenced they had a position paper on climate change. And in it, like you stated, they promoted that there was no debate, there was no contrary information. Any information provided was basically disinformation and should have no place in the school or in the classroom. They endorsed censorship of any information that disputed this notion of catastrophic man-made warming. That's not how science should be taught. That's not the scientific method. The scientific method goes back more than 400 years. So we promote at the CO2 Coalition the scientific method and critical thinking skills for students. What the NSTA is promoting is groupthink, censorship, a lack of critical thinking. Really, it's just an indoctrination process into a political agenda. They did not differentiate between real science and political science. And it angered us, and we created a rather lengthy rebuttal to their policy. And we published it the first day of the convention, which was just 2 days ago. We were able to exhibit our wares for almost 24 hours. We had the big takeaway, Scott, I got, is this overwhelming number of teachers that loved what we had. People were coming up and say, thank you for doing this. You're just, it's wonderful that somebody finally, we didn't know anything about that you were out there, or that there was information out there to dispute this. Many times this was people thanking us for it. And What we saw, two people were saying, these are teachers from all over the country. Well, actually all over the world attending this. These people were saying, I love what you're doing. I'm going to take this back with me, but I dare not teach it in my classroom or I will be fired. And so what we're doing is pushing back, and particularly this notion of the consensus opinion, of this 97% consensus is the most often used number, that all scientists or 97% believe in catastrophic man-made warming. Well, that's not quite so, because me and all the members, the 120 scientists that are part of the CO2 coalition, we would all be part of that 97% consensus, because they cast a wide net. Anyone that believes that CO2 is increasing, that CO2 is a greenhouse gas, and that CO2 has a warming effect on the atmosphere, which we do, we don't dispute that, we would be part of the 97% consensus. We just don't believe that the warming effect is as high as what they are, and we believe it's overwhelmed by the natural forces that have been driving temperatures up and down really since the dawn of time. And that's what we pushed back on. Again, we want to, in the schools, and this isn't just the United States, but around the world, again, they're trying to indoctrinate our students. Whereas what we want to do is provide all the science, all the facts for this debate. And there is a debate on climate change and what's causing it. Is it real? Of course it is. The surprising thing, Scott, would be as if there is no climate change, because this has gone on for, again, since the dawn of time. Temperature rise and temperature falls, and sometimes significantly in a short term. So we at the CO2 Coalition want to provide that information, enough information that you and your listeners can make up their own mind. Look at the data. We make it easy enough, and charts easy enough for non-scientists to understand. Take a look at it. Look at the last 8,000 years of temperature and CO2 data. What do you find? You find that CO2 has steadily increased over 8,000 years, all the while temperature has declined, completely opposite of what we're being told. We also find that CO2 increases follow temperature changes, not the other way around. CO2 follows temperature. As the oceans warm, they expel CO2. So it's not CO2 driving temperature, but rather temperature driving CO2. We know that's been the case for many hundreds of thousands of years. But they'll say, well, that's all changed in the middle of the 20th century. That's all different now. No, so the same scientific processes today are in action as what were 100 and 800,000 years ago.
Let me go back to this 97% of scientists agree number, because it is one of the cudgels used by the promoters of man-caused global warming as to say, this is clear evidence. Look, almost all scientists agree on this. And then when you break it out, which has happened in the past, where you get to when you get the list released, a lot of the scientists who are used in this argument say, I don't believe that. But because they wrote a paper on the subject, they were swept up into, as you said, they were swept up into this giant, what looks like an overwhelming number. 98% of scientists agree with that man-caused global warming is destroying the planet, and et cetera, et cetera, all those colloquialisms that go along with it. But the reality is that of the 98% of those scientists, many of them disagree entirely with the conclusions of the people using that number. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, entirely. And consensus has no place in the scientific process. And in fact, Michael Crichton famously said, if it's consensus, it's not science. And if it's science, it's not consensus. So we have to fight back against that. The Nobel laureate, Richard Feynman, also had some pithy comments about that. And these notable scientists have been quite opposed to this consensus opinion. And so we need to push back, and that's what we're doing at the CO2 Coalition. We had a group of scientists, well, maybe 18 months ago, that were so concerned over the state of science education in both the United States and Canada, and really around the world. We launched an education initiative, and I'm so proud of what we've been able to do. We're ready to launch our website in about 2 weeks. It's called the CO2 Learning Center. .com. Right now we have our videos are up and can be viewed at CO2 Learning Center YouTube channel. We have four of them. Again, these are educational science-based videos, and they're done anime style by our talented Brazilian illustrator. They're just fascinating. The kids, they just love them because of the anime cartoon type style of it, and they're learning all the while. They're learning about gases in the air, about the beneficial aspects of carbon dioxide. They learn about photosynthesis and also the periodic table and what we call CO2 the miracle molecule. We also call water vapor, or water, the magic molecule, because it has properties that are unlike really any other molecule. And it's really fascinating. My 5-year-old granddaughter loves the videos. She loves our books. Just before she, at 4 years old, she actually read to me our first book. It was called Once Upon a Time, The True Story of Carbon Dioxide, The Miracle Molecule. She learns, and when she gets up, she's got a plant out on the porch. And she gets up and breathes on it every morning because she knows that it's kind of funny. It's cute, actually, but she knows that she's breathing out, exhaling huge amounts of CO2. And CO2 is a plant food and causes plants to grow greatly. And she can explain all this. She knows what photosynthesis is at the age of 5 because of our books and our videos. Maybe a little bit because of grandpa, but... And that's what we want to do. So, we want to be able to reach out. We have lesson plans.
So the way that the left has commanded such great devotion to its climate change, global warming message is by indoctrinating young people from grade one forward. And what your program is doing is to actually introduce them to actual science, teaching them to think for themselves and question the dogma they're being taught in the public school systems. Is that correct?
Exactly. They should be taught to question everything. And in fact, I was struggling to recall the Richard Feynman quote, but it's come to me now. It was he famously said, "I would rather have questions that can't be answered than answers that can't be questioned." Again, this is a Nobel winning physicist, and he had it right. There should be nothing in science that can't be questioned. In fact, one of the most researched theories is the theory of relativity. Papers after papers have been studied, thousands of scientists back and forth. It's not a fact, it's still questioned. It's still in debate. It's still the theory of relativity. But they want to change climate change into a fact that can't be argued. It was brought home to us quite evidently here in Atlanta when we got thrown out. They didn't like us criticizing how they want to teach science. And so we were censored. And that's what we find. We will not get place on mainstream media to talk about the science, the facts, and the data that contradict this. They don't want you to know that the warming trend that we're in started more than 300 years ago. It's been warming in fits and starts for more than 300 years, long before we started adding CO2. The first 250 years of that warming couldn't have been CO2 driven. It was naturally driven. But they say, well, it's all changed. No, that's not how science works. The scientific method tells us that the same processes that have been action for thousands of millions of years is still in process today. Might there be some warming from CO2? Yes, there probably is from increased CO2. I'm okay with that because as a geologist, I can look back through human history and look back at the three previous warming periods dating back to the first great civilizations and find that other warm periods that were warmer than today were hugely beneficial to ecosystems and primarily to humanity. These really warm periods were prodigious. Great empires rose up and civilizations and food was bountiful. And it's the cold periods, Scott, that were horrific. Each cold period was associated with crop failure, famine, pestilence, and mass depopulation. Isn't that exactly opposite of what we're being told? We're being told fear, we can't let it get another degree centigrade warmer or there's going to be famine and pestilence. History tells us just the opposite. It's the cold periods that we should fear. What I say is we should welcome the warmth and fear the cold. Because the other point here in relation to that, 20 times as many people, according to the largest study of its kind, 20 times as the number of people die in cold-related deaths as heat-related death. 20 times as many people die due to cold as to heat. What does that tell me? That tells me global warming saves lives. And when you say that, people's heads explode. They go, oh, you can't say that. Yeah, I can. And I can back it up with science, facts, and data. And that's... they don't want this information out there. They don't want people to know that. And that's why they go to these extremes of actually expelling scientists from a science teaching convention. We had with me, I'm a geologist, master's degree in geology.
It sort of goes against the very nature of what they claim, that all scientists agree with them, and then they boot the ones who don't agree with them out of the debate, and so they can claim unity in all of this. We're speaking with Gregory Wrightstone. He is the executive director of the CO2 Coalition, and we're going to take a short time out. When we come back, there is some irony buried in some of this, and we're going to get to that. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on Through the Looking Glass on TNT Radio. I'm Scott Wheeler.
Jeremy Nell on TNT Radio.
What does human rights mean anyway? I have no idea. If I think about the last few years and the absolute audacity of the government in the last few years to come out on Human Rights Day and talk about human rights while having locked down and forced people into their homes, it is just so Monty Python-esque. It's just unbelievable. You know, I wonder if these people, these authorities, these illegitimate authorities, I wonder if they have any idea what irony is. Are they self-aware at all? I somehow don't think so. I mean, I think they just operate on autopilot. They just get lots and lots and lots of money to act. You know, they're just on a stage. And yet, there are so many people who still buy into the theater. And I'm so glad that I can be one of those people here on TNT who can see through the act, who can see the script.
Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
The conversation continues.
We chose not to vaccinate our children because we feel like the shot posed more threat than the disease.
On today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Through the Looking Glass. I'm Scott Wheeler, broadcasting live. And we have with us the executive director of the CO2 Coalition, Gregory Wrightstone. And we're talking about being expelled from the National Science Teaching Association's convention this week. A group of scientists, Mr. Wrightstone, one of them, were expelled at this convention by the NSTA, which claims that all scientists agree with them, and yet they booted a group of scientists who were with Mr. Wrightstone who don't agree with them, and they booted them for disagreeing with them. If this is not staggering irony, I think you have to find a new meaning for it. And there is actually some more additional irony that we're going to get to throughout the broadcast on this. And first, I wanted to quote a Dr. Richard Lenzen. He is a climate scientist at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, the prestigious MIT. This week, he made the statement, "This is exploiting people's ignorance to promote fear with regards to the climate change driven agenda and messaging coming from the left and the Democrat Party and those who are promoting climate fear." And you're acquainted with Dr. Lenzen, is that right, Mr. Wrightstone?
Oh, sir. In fact, I just corresponded via email with him this morning. We're in touch regularly. He was a past board member of the CO2 Coalition. He was a co-author on this recent report we did. He's a member of the National Academy of Sciences. We had two other National Academy of Sciences members that were were co-authors of this recent report. So we're not lightweights. Will Happer, he's an emeritus professor of physics from Princeton. He's written over 300 papers that are peer reviewed on various subjects. One of the top scientists, and joining me in Atlanta, I'm a geologist, and I was accepted as an expert reviewer on Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which gives me a little bit of credit. Joining me were Rafael Nascimento, a doctor of chemistry and probably the top nanotechnology expert in the world, and also there was Dr. Sharon Camp, a PhD in analytic chemistry, who authored our lesson plan. So these weren't lightweights that we had there. We didn't talk to anybody that were spewing hate toward us that were actually scientists. So they're dictating to these top scientists in the world what they're getting wrong. It's you're right. The irony was rich. So again, we're not. They can't point it and say, you know what you're doing. You're not a scientist. Well, yes, we are. And Scott, the CO2 Coalition is like no other group in the world. We stay out of the politics as best we can. We stick to the science. And we have mostly scientists, engineers, energy experts that join us. And we're proud to present the tip of the spear when it comes to the scientific data associated with climate change. And we'll continue to do that.
What are some of the accusations that are thrown at your organization? We know one is you're funded by big oil and things like that. What do you think is the motive behind those kinds of accusations as an attempt to marginalize the science from organizations such as yours?
Yeah, I had a guy from NOAA. I think he was sent over on a mission because the NOAA booth was just next to ours or just close to ours. And I think he was sent over. And he said, you know, I had a number of people that came and told me about that you were here exhibiting, and I couldn't believe it. But he says, now I see it with my own eyes. And I said, well, let's talk. And we had discussions, and he wasn't buying any of this. He said, we can make that stuff up. And, you know, I said, we're using NOAA data. This is NOAA data that we're showing you, that you provided.
their own data. Let me say NOAA, National Oceanic Atmospheric Association or Administration, a government organization, and its own data you're quoting back to them. And his reaction was what again?
Oh, he just well, was that basically, I don't, you know, you're showing all kinds of stuff and, you know, you're basically science deniers. Actually, he wasn't as hateful as other, but he ended the conversation with, where do you get your funding? And I said, well, we have lots of sources. Many of them are individual donors that just want to support. What about, you know, you get a lot of money from the oil companies. And you know, we don't go into the details of what our funding is, but just between us girls, we don't get oil company money. If they wanted to offer it to us, we'll probably take it. Our funding are from mom and dad and grandpa that are sending us money.
Right, from small donors like so many organizations. But here's some staggering irony. We're going to break some news here. The NSTA itself is funded by Big Oil on their 2023 year-ending financial statement. It shows Shell Science Lab, that's Shell Oil, Science Lab poured in $277,000 to the NSTA. They also received funding from Chevron to the tune of $23,500. And Big Oil is actually funding the people who want to do away with Big Oil, and perhaps they believe they're buying protection. But it goes even further. While the CO2 Coalition was being thrown out of convention, the National Science Teaching Association convention, a representative of Shell Oil was welcomed and gave a speech, awarded some prizes, and was thanked. And I'm going right from the National Science Teaching Association's Twitter page. Thank you, Fraser and Shell, for all you do to support science education. So there was a representative, while you're being accused of being on the payroll of Big Oil, Big Oil is actually funding the accusers, and they were allowed to make presentations at the NSTA organization while the CO2 Coalition was being escorted out the door by security. I happened to witness this myself. And so is it just not staggering irony, bizarre, backwards in your estimation, Mr. Redstone?
Oh, that's rich. I'm sorry. You're making me laugh. It's just, that is rich. I was unaware of that, but thank you for sharing that. I'll have to look that up. And you're right. But you would think what we're doing, we're not doing it for Big Oil. We're not doing what we do. We're doing it for the people of the earth, for humanity. What we're doing is showing that more carbon dioxide is beneficial. We know that people around the world need a lot of what we write about, Scott, is about energy poverty and how we need to lift people up out of generational poverty by providing them. And when I talk about energy, there are three things I mentioned: reliability, affordability, and dependability. And you know, it's got to be clean energy. And we can do that with fossil fuels by providing clean coal technology, natural gas, and oil to lift people up out of generational poverty. We have our research associate, Vijay Jayaraj, from Bengaluru, India, just returned home to India. And he writes a lot about the developing world and what he calls the new climate colonialism. Where the developing world in Africa and India are being, their energy sources are drying up, their funding from the World Bank and other places, because they don't want to, the World Bank wants to promote inefficient, unreliable, unaffordable wind turbine energy and solar energy. Would think that the energy companies would say, oh, well, CO2.
Just last year, the World Bank was boasting that it was pouring $40 million into green energy projects around the world. And you point to something that's some we hear a lot. It's now the green revolution has now sort of merged itself with some of the other grievance organizations, and they're claiming, for example, that people who are the groups who are disaffected the most, affected by climate change and harmed by climate change, are racial minorities and the poor and minorities. And the reality is, those who are likely to be adversely affected the most is those same people's remedy for what they call global warming. They're the ones who are going to be without electricity because their countries are too poor to finance green energy alternatives to fossil fuels. So how does this happen that they can be put out obvious things that are contradictory in this way, and yet no one challenges these organizations to explain how it is taking coal, fossil fuels away from nations like India and other places is not going to somehow is not going to harm the very people they claim are being harmed by global warming. Sorry for that convoluted question.
You're exactly right, Gregory Wrightstone.
Of the CO2 Coalition. Go ahead. Sorry, that was rather convoluted question, yeah. But please do your best with it.
No. Yeah, well, but you're exactly right in that if we just look at India, there's 600 million people in India living in energy poverty. By that, I mean they don't have access to electricity at all. And they're cooking on over in their homes over dry dung and wood, whatever they can burn, leading to maybe 4 million, according to the UN, 4 million early deaths due to the particulates that they're inhaling. Those are 4 million deaths that are easily preventable. Prime Minister Modi in India has a massive campaign. He wants to electrify the entire nation. It's a noble goal because Prime Minister Modi, I think his noble objectives, he wants to lift his nation up out of and his people up out of generational poverty. He knows, along with President Xi in China, they both know that if you want a vibrant, growing economy, what do you need? Reliable, abundant, affordable energy. Joe Biden doesn't understand that. What President Xi is going to do is promote these anti-fossil fuel campaigns in the West, all the while they're building coal-fired plants right and left. It's mainly China, to a lesser extent India, but their emissions are skyrocketing. Ours are declining slightly. I'm okay with increasing CO2 emissions, Scott, because as you know, you were at the conference, and our motto is "We love CO2, and so should you." I tell you what, heads were exploding when we had these people, and their eyes would get wide. They go, "You mean CO2 is good?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's really good. Look what it's doing. Look at the benefits it's importing." Crop growth, vegetation growth, forests are expanding, not contracting. Some of these people were, we didn't get much hate, but we got enough. And the ones that were hate just would not listen or look at anything in terms of, we rely on peer-reviewed studies and papers. We rely on government studies from NOAA, NASA, and other sources. There's a lot of good science out there, but they hide the science that doesn't support their narrative of a consensus catastrophic man-made warming scenario. It's why are they doing it? Scott, you didn't ask me, but you're going to at some point. You're going to ask me, why are they doing it? And I get asked that almost every interview. Well, you're telling us they're lying about these things. And I'm like, yeah, they are. But I can't answer that question of why they're doing it. Scott, you are just as qualified as I am to tell me why they're doing it. Every single person listening is just as qualified as I am to tell me why they're doing it. My job as a scientist is to look at the data, and I will tell you that Dr. Puffin Puff or whatever, who he says this, okay, here's the science, the facts, and the data that proves he's wrong. So my job as a scientist is to put the information out there that disputes this climate crisis narrative. And the one thing they're trying to do, I will say, and they've been very successful, is to institute a climate of fear. Fear is a great motivator. It's probably one of the top motivators for humanity. You know, hunger, cold, and fear is probably, you know, right up there between hunger and housing. You know, you got the climate of fear that there is, and why else they need to have fear of this pending doom in order to impose these horrifically, economically destructive and harmful things like net zero and the Green New Deal. In fact, we just had a paper we published last week.
Hold that thought, Mr.
Challenging
Redstone.
Net zero with science.
Hold that thought. We'll get to it right after this short timeout. We'll be right back with more on Through the Looking Glass on the great TNT Radio Network. We'll be right back after this.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
Tornadoes in Los Angeles? How can this be happening? Well, it actually has happened before, but we've had tornadoes in California. California is not immune to such things, especially when there's so much cold air in the mid and upper levels of the atmosphere, it can produce something like that. But of course, everybody's saying this is a sign of climate change. Everything is a sign of climate change. We have a tremendous geomagnetic storm going on today. This is raising eyebrows all over the place. Now, let me tell you a little story. In 1976, I was in physics of the upper atmosphere class, and there's a big geomagnetic storm going on, right? And we had this aurora borealis. I think I told this stupid joke yesterday, so I'm not going to tell it again. And if I didn't tell it to you yesterday, you're not going to want to hear it anyway today. But we had a tremendous aurora borealis going off with the geomagnetic storm. So that has happened before. There's a whole bunch of things that keep happening that apparently the media doesn't think has happened before, but they have. So calm down. The atmospheric apocalypse is not yet upon us. If it is, well, I'm going to be the guy that tried to forecast it. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you've got.
This is your captain. We are going to be experiencing some slight turbulence. Please fasten your... Oh, hold on. Just got a video of my cat.
Imagine the pilot of an airplane was as confident as you are texting and driving. Seems kind of crazy when you put it like that.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Scott Wheeler and Through the Looking Glass on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back. Just as the announcer said, you're listening to Through the Looking Glass, and I am Scott Wheeler. We are speaking with the executive director of the CO2 Coalition, Gregory Wrightstone. He is also a scientist, and we are talking about, to recap, there was a science convention among the NSTA, the National Science Teaching Association, and they threw Mr. Wrightstone and a group of scientists out of their convention for disagreeing with their scientific conclusion that global warming is man-caused and it's going to be the end of the world if we don't stop it. And you were making a comment about a paper you had authored, one of your scientists had authored going into the break, Mr. Wright. So pick it up from there for us, please.
Yeah, we just published a paper. It was called Challenging Net Zero with Scientific Data. And it was I was proud to be a co-author along with Dr. William Happer, who's emeritus professor of physics at Princeton. The aforementioned Dr. Richard Lenzen, emeritus professor of physics at MIT. And we went through why net the support of these people, why they're advancing the net zero agenda, and just saw that it failed on time and time on the principles of the scientific process. We didn't go back through. What we did was took a look at the scientific process and how it violated all portions of this. It was a rather lengthy document. It's been very well received. You can find this along with other publications and our new paper on challenging the National Science Teaching Association's position statement on climate change. If you go to the CO2coalition.org, CO2coalition.org, you'll find that and many other videos, blogs, and publications that we've published. And, we're doing quite a bit of work. And I'm so proud again.
I was going to ask, could you explain what net zero is for the audience? This is a political objective, and it is...
Net zero would be states and governments around the world want to have zero carbon dioxide emissions. And you can get there either by taking the emissions that they do and make, and it's called sequestration. You'll actually suck that CO2 out of the atmosphere and either put it into the ocean or pump it underground to get rid of it. And again, it's just stupid. Because again, our big mantra are the benefits of carbon dioxide. Why in the world would you want to pump a beneficial molecule into the ground? There are also proposals for geoengineering to scatter dust and various things in the air using planes to stop it. It might work, but it's the unintended consequences of these things. And again, it might work to solve a non-existent problem. Net zero is basically you'd have to get rid of all fossil fuels. No more driving your Ford Taurus with a gasoline-powered engine. No more using your natural gas stove to cook your meal. No more natural gas stoves in restaurants. You're going to be driving a Prius or some other type of electric vehicle that's, by the way, likely to spontaneously combust at any time. They want to control every aspect of your lives. Now they're turning, you heard it before, it was natural gas stoves. Now they're looking at dishwashers. They're looking at all sorts of things to restrain your use of any kind of energy. And they want to do that and remove coal-fired power plants, natural gas-fired power plants, any use of oil or diesel for power and go entirely electric. And that's a prescription for disaster. Do you like brownouts and blackouts? Well, I hope so, because you better get used to it. They're going to be coming often and regularly in the future as we keep moving away from fossil fuel energy and try to go with unaffordable, expensive, unreliable an energy that's what we call it. It's not abundant. In other words, it takes a lot of acres of whatever it is you're doing to generate the same megawatt as what a nuclear or gas-fired electricity generation station would be.
We're speaking with geologist Gregory Wrightstone. He's the executive director of the CO2 Coalition. Mr. Wrightstone, are you familiar with the Escalante National Grand Staircase out in Utah, an area where there is an abundance of low sulfur coal? It is Biden, the president, has just recently recategorized it as a protected monument area, where low sulfur coal, of course, as you can explain, burns cleaner than regular coal, like that which comes from the east part of the United States. And during the 1990s, the Clinton administration locked up our only source of this low sulfur coal and the Escalante National Grand Staircase, and said we can't mine there anymore because this place is so beautiful you can't disturb anything and the beauty, natural beauty of it. And it turned out that one of his chief funders, the Riady family of Indonesia, actually had a financial benefit from that. Well, Fast forward to the Trump administration, he lifted the restrictions for mining at the national, at the Escalante. And now Biden has now reinstituted the ban on mining low sulfur, cleaner burning coal. And so this sort of undermines, I know you don't want to get into the politics of it, but it does sort of undermine their argument that this is for the good of the nation and the good of the world and the good of the climate that they are taking these actions. The reality is that they should, if we're in this desperate situation and need to burn cleaner coal for the sake of the environment, why would they not? A desperate situation would call on using the cleanest burning coal you can get your hands on, not saying, well, the area is so pretty, we can't touch it. It's, and I've been there, it's not that pretty anyway. It's a bunch of jagged rocks that you find all over the Rocky Mountains range and the Sierra Nevadas, but nothing unusual or sui generis about it. And so it does kind of speak to the motive that there's something else involved here. It's not really about the environment. It seems to be about something else. And what that is, we probably need a different kind of expert. But does it make sense to you that if you were really concerned about pollution, you would lock up our only source of low sulfur coal in the United States because it happens to be in an area that some people think is beautiful?
Well, that's just one great example of what you're talking about restricting what could be cleaner energy. And I'm not an expert. I don't know much about the details in this, but we can look no further than the Marcellus Shale, vast reserves in the eastern United States. I was a co-author of the initial first peer-reviewed comprehensive paper on the Marcellus Shale, and the size of it is enormous. But I'll tell just to show how big this is. During our research, we looked at the top 10 natural gas fields in the world, and the gas in place of those top 10 combined. The top 10 gas fields in the world, I'll repeat, combined, didn't equal what was in the Marcellus. That's how big it is. So we've got this vast, vast reserve, and there's another barely tapped reservoir below that may even be bigger. It's just with these layers. This is the eastern United States, close to the markets, but yet they want to tax it and increase the cost to make it less economic for development. Here is this clean burning resource. The only thing when you burn natural gas, when you create it, is carbon dioxide, the miracle molecule, and water vapor. And that comes out of the stacks of the electrical generation plant for using natural gas. And again, America is the Saudi Arabia of natural gas. In fact, during this research, I coined a new term. A giant field is 3 trillion cubic feet of gas. A supergiant is 30 trillion cubic feet of gas. And I coined this new term. It was called a mega giant, 300 trillion cubic feet of gas in the reserve. And there are only 4 of these worldwide. 3 of them are in the United States, and 2 of them are in the Appalachian Basin of the eastern United States. So we're sitting on this tremendous resource that we should utilize. And we can produce clean burning, natural gas-fired electricity. And one of the secrets, one of the just stupid things they're doing, imagine in the eastern United States, I know you've listeners all over the world, but Pennsylvania is south of the New England area. And all these reserves of natural gas can't get north into New England toward Boston because both New York and New Jersey have banned pipelines. So it's landlocked and we can't get that gas to where it's really needed. It's almost economic suicide, what they're advancing. And again, it's, why are they doing it? I think President Xi is he's got to be shaking his head and saying, thank you, thank you, thank you. I'd love to see where all the money is funding these green groups. There have to be. Who benefits from this green energy? Putin, President Xi?
Well, one, we know that the Chinese are a direct beneficiary because they continue to build coal plants, coal energy plants. But otherwise, you have American companies such as General Electric, who is also a funder of the USTA and is in the electric battery, car battery building business. As it said in a recent release, it said that it is recharging in October of 2022. It says it is by making its sixth equity investment in lithium ion battery manufacturer A123 Systems. GE invested $30 million and $102 million Series E financing. So, and it's while it's getting grant money from the Department of Energy, it is also granting it using its own resources to fund the development of these of batteries that will power cars, electric vehicles. So there's a financial interest in this, and yet no one questions that. Everybody, the immediate default position of the Green Revolution supporters is, you're funded by big oil if you point to any science that contradicts their beliefs. And yet at the same time, they're being funded. We know everybody's familiar, I'm sure, with the Solyndra thing where they poured tens of millions of dollars into Obama's election campaign in 2008. And then immediately after taking office, they were granted a multi-billion dollar grant from the U.S. government. And so it's almost like laundering U.S. tax money to organizations that support certain politicians, and then they get the money back tenfold in the form of grants to do work that really doesn't need to be done. And so, I know you want to stay away from politics, but at some point, there is a political motive here, and in some cases, it's money for private corporations, which just, I think there was a 30 Rock episode where Jack Donaghy, the Alec Baldwin character, actually talked about how it was brilliant to, you know, we're going to make money off the green energy. Let's go green. We'll go green and we'll make the same amount of money that we do from the old system. And this is things that are frequently misinterpreted or overlooked by the people who are pushing this message. As we run out of time, is there anything you'd like to say in closing, Mr. Wrightson, about the events that happened this week? And how do people find out more information about what you're doing to fight this monopolar message coming from the Green Revolution people?
Well, I was going to say it's disappointing. It was almost expected. Because we expected to be censored. And thankfully, they let us go for 24 hours because we handed out nearly all of our publications to eager teachers that wanted this, that were thirsty. That was one of my participants, the helpers there. She said that she found the teachers were thirsty for this information we're providing. And so you can learn more by going to co2coalition.org. CO2coalition.org to learn more. Again, we'll be launching our CO2 Learning Center with education materials for the students. It might be your children or grandchildren or great-grandchildren to help them learn science without the climate alarmism. And and as for energy, I support using our energy resources for the betterment of mankind, and we should do it as good stewards. I think everyone can agree with that. And also, the other big takeaway from today is that modest warming and increasing CO2 are leading to ecosystems that are thriving and prospering, and humanity and the human condition is improving due to warming and more CO2.
And Mr. Wrightstone, thank you so much for joining us this week on Through the Looking Glass. From Atlanta, I'm Scott Wheeler for TNT Radio, signing off.